This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 523, recorded on November 14th, 2017. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry. You may already know that. We join, we're available every week, and we've been doing so for, I don't know how many years and months it is, but we're on episode 523, and we do this quite often, Sally, right?
We do it quite often, Martin, and it has been 9 years and 10.5 months as of today.
I knew you'd have the numbers.
Coming up on a big 10-year anniversary, yep.
Okay, we're approaching that. So God has been good to us, and this season, each season, we kind of use the school year as our seasonal calendar. We try and pick some kind of theme or something that runs through the course of the school year. Sometimes it's a book review, sometimes it's other things. This year we decided to spend a month on a particular topic and kind of exhaust or look under every corner of the topic. And we've talked about meetings and meeting management and meeting efficiencies. Last month, we talked about video, and this is security month, and we had a good time talking about, well, I had a good time talking about passwords last week, maybe, hopefully Sally did too, hopefully our listeners picked up a few things. Passwords are always fun, but I am excited about our show this week, Sally, because we've got some friends with us.
Not just friends, but security expert friends, and that is a good thing to have. And they're our friends because they work with us in Wells Technology, but they're all our listeners' friends as well because they're going to share some great information about network security, and that would be Dan Reavers and Rob Benson. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hi.
So why don't we start by letting you guys introduce yourselves. What you do, what your responsibilities are at Wells, and that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I'm Dan Reavers. I'm the Director of Information Services here. We handle all of the security and support for PCs and all the hardware, the networking and the help desk and everything that goes with that.
Good. Rob?
And I'm Rob. I'm in charge of security and general infrastructure here at the CMM and other duties as assigned.
And Dan, you've been around these parts a long, long time, much longer than anybody else around the table. In fact, you could probably add up our years of service. It may not even equal yours, huh?
I've been around for a while, yeah.
And you were in ministry as well. You were a teacher in our synod, so you have that perspective as well. So that's awesome. Can you move your speakerphone a little closer or no? Is it at the end of its leash?
Well, it's got a little bit more closer. That helped.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. So where do you want to start? Let's maybe start about our churches and schools are all networked these days. They've seen the need to do that, and you know, with good reason, as they're trying to communicate with each other and get to the outside world. So our focus today, for at least I think from their perspective, is kind of network security, which seems kind of like a broad topic, and maybe even a broad goal of trying to keep things secure, but maybe even impossible to master. I mean, is network security really possible?
It's ongoing. I mean, it's by degrees. There's no 100% impenetrable system except for the one that's disconnected from the internet and locked in a room by itself. I mean, There's always going to be something you missed.
Goal is probably the key word there because, as Rob pointed out, it's probably nothing you're going to ever accomplish 100%, but you want to get as close as you can.
And maybe even I should have asked the question a little bit differently, or maybe even a pre-question question. Some in our churches and schools may be even asking, why is it important? What information do I have that is so precious that I need to be concerned about network security?
Lists are super important depending on the church, depending on the church body. If you maintain a list of people anywhere for any purpose, that list can be used as an attack vector.
For member information might have personally identifiable information in there, sure.
Maybe member information, student information.
Addresses.
Right.
The real trick to a lot of it is if they get enough information to impersonate somebody else so they can get an in to get more information. And that's always the trick. It's wiggling yourself into getting more information from the basic information you have. You know, like, you know, the staff list, you could look and say, hey, Rob's the network security guy, so maybe I'll call a few of the employees up and see if I can pretend I'm him. They don't know him real well. Maybe they'll fall for it. Give me a password.
Right. And it wouldn't have to be information like that you might expect, like social security numbers. It could be something as simple as a phone number or an address.
That's the list. I mean, any list right now is suspect, especially right now when security is, you know, it's been a bad year for security, obviously, a bad couple. And we're facing more and more bad players who are casting the net wider and wider.
So one question I should ask before we get into some specifics, excuse me, is I'm sure those call workers out there and those who are members of our Synod would like to know, how secure is their data in our hands? We maintain information about our call workers, about our churches, about our schools, about our donors. Let me put you guys on the spot. How secure is it?
Well, a lot of it, a lot of their data is actually off-site. We've moved a lot of things to more secure locations, but our location itself is pretty state-of-the-art. The CMM itself is pretty state-of-the-art. We monitor pretty much everything that goes on the network. We continually are busy upgrading our defenses. So we're definitely not low-hanging fruit.
Okay. Are there standards that we apply to our security practices?
I like to follow PCI, the PCI standards, but they all follow the national, the NIST standards, which are like the international security standards.
So we're in alignment with those.
We're in alignment with them, yes.
Awesome. All right, so let's put on the hat then of the church and school and maybe talk about short list of things that they can do, maybe hardware or software recommendations or just things for them to be aware of. Where would you start if you were in charge of a church or school?
Well, you'd probably want to start with making sure that your, can we use the word boundary, your external access is secure. You should certainly have a good firewall. I'm presuming everybody has an internet connection, a good firewall. You'd also want to make sure that you've done some training with your employees, the staff members there, possibly even with the children, to make sure that they're aware of some of the dangers that the internet can pose. Rob, what else
would
you suggest?
I can't emphasize training users is absolutely above and beyond anything you can do, the number one thing. In almost every case of a significant break-in in the last, say, decade or so, it has been because a user clicked on a bad email or did something they shouldn't have been doing. Well, you know, maybe they weren't trained that they weren't supposed to do it. But it's very important that you keep your user base, the people who are working with you, educated to, you know, just not click on that email link maybe, or not to open unexpected attachments. Just keep away from that stuff. I think you did mention the firewall as well. Outdated firewalls are pretty bad vectors right now, as a few weaknesses have been found in them recently. Automated things. I know a lot of people have switched over to things like, I even own a Nest and I own remote cameras and things like that. Make sure that those things are up to date too, because those are sitting right inside your house and those call home. So they can be used against you. So make sure those things are getting up to date. They generally update themselves, but they may not be, especially if they're older.
Endpoint protection would be another thing, anti-malware software of some sort or another on the workstations that they use. That's more important depending on what operating system.
So do you have any specific product recommendations for either antivirus or firewall software?
I love Sophos right now. It's my big favorite. There's a free version of it you can try out. I would recommend anything that has the ability to centrally manage if you can afford it. If you're in an organization where you have the ability to afford something with centralized management, get it. Get yourself Sophos or get yourself Panda, something that's based on the cloud, because it gives you a way better idea of what's going on with your users and where your gaps are.
Right. And speaking of management, let me just go back to the firewall issue too. The firewall is not just something that's to protect you from the folks that might want to get in, but it also can be a tool to help you recognize some of those dangers. The reports that a firewall might be able to give you can help you understand what kind of issues you're facing, who's trying to get at you, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that we've recommended quite often is, or said quite often, is that you really don't have to pay for an anti-virus or anti-malware product. A lot of the free ones are very good. Rob suggested about having central management is an important factor too. Even some of the free ones have some
free's,
of that.
Free is way better than nothing.
Yeah. But if you are, especially a larger church or school, it may be worth paying a little bit of money to get something like that where you can actually monitor in addition to protect.
Especially stuff that fights against cryptographic viruses that will encrypt your files. That has done a terrible amount of damage to people. Fortunately, we here at the CMM have not.
You're talking about ransomware.
Yeah, ransomware, yeah. A lot of times, not even the people that created it can actually decrypt it. So even if you were to pay, which you shouldn't do ever, there's no guarantee they can get your data back. So the best defense is a good offense on this. So make sure it has a module that's specifically dedicated to that. We do maintain that here. It works pretty well. It's caught a couple of legitimate products that were encrypting things, but I'd rather know it's working.
Right. So let me summarize a couple of the tips that you said. Make sure your users are updating their software, which comes with security patches, you know, all the time. If you don't have a kind of a centralized way to do it, just make sure that there's a general policy or practice that you're always updating it. Obviously have a good firewall, and then an antivirus solution. Sometimes the built-in ones are okay even. Windows Defender or whatever. Let's talk a little bit more about firewalls before we go to the next topic. And there are a couple different kinds of firewalls. There's the firewall that you would have at the server level on your perimeter, but there are also firewalls that exist on these machines. Do you need both of them?
Oh yeah, especially now. Back in the day, that was only like 10 years ago, but back in the day, we used to have the theory that you keep a hard outer shell and then the inside's kind of mushy, mm-hmm. as far as security goes. Now we're into things like micro-segmentation, which means each machine is its own little firewalled world. You should have a firewall. Most operating systems include it now. Even Mac actually has a firewall if mm-hmm. you turn it on.
And a lot of antivirus products also provide a firewall as part of the product.
Right. And it probably helps in watching traffic, not only inbound, but then also outbound, right? Because that can be as much a problem as the inbound traffic.
Yep.
It can be a worse problem.
Okay.
It's a sign that you've got a problem already. So if it's doing unauthorized outbound traffic, that's bad.
You don't want to do that.
So obviously you're protecting your local data, but more and more people these days are going to cloud-based storage. So many of our schools are Google Apps for Education schools now and are collaborating out in the cloud and storing very little on their local machines. Do they have anything to worry about with those kind of scenarios?
I like cloud-based storage as a general rule. I really do. I think it provides a layer of not security, but protection against accidental file deletion. It can protect against, if your computer crashes. You can save all that data, and we do use the cloud for a lot of our storage. I would be wary of storing any like super personal information. Like, I wouldn't put social security numbers out there as a general rule. There might be reasons to do it, but I definitely would not do it. Be very wary of what the service terms are if you're using somebody who isn't a major provider. In fact, even a major provider, make sure that they can't go through your material. Early on, that was a significant problem with some of the kind of off-brand storage locations. They were actually allowed to go through your data, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that comes up a lot when you talk about cloud storage is multi-factor or two-factor authentication. Seems to be getting easier and easier. Is that something that you would recommend everybody kind of research if they're using cloud storage, use something like that? Maybe you can explain a little bit what it is.
Multi-factor authentication means that you're using basically more than one determiner. It's kind of funny. I think way back in the 80s, that was considered a username and a password as multi-factor.
Right.
But now we have things like something you have on you can be the factor, like your computer could be this token. You could also have an application on your phone that can act as the token. Basically, how that works is you have a username and a password like usual, but maybe the first time you log in there from a computer or every so often, it's confirmed. Maybe through an app, or they can send you a text message with a number and it will ask you, hey, what's this number? And you'll enter that number and you'll be allowed to pass. The really useful thing, I use it for video games, but I also turned it on with my Apple account. It's really nice because you can tell where people came from, and the really best of them, even Google, my Google account also has that kind of security where I can tell where people were logging in from. It's kind of interesting, and then you're pretty sure that nobody's getting into your account. Mm-hmm. You're pretty sure. Watch it with Apple, though. If you have older Apple devices and you enable it, your Apple device might not be able to access your data. I have a couple of old, not iPads, but the little handheld thing, the iPod. I have some older iPods, and they will not work with multi-factor authentication enabled.
Interesting.
You might want to get rid of those.
Time to move on.
Yeah.
We talked about your local storage, your cloud storage. What if you want to get to all of this from a remote location? Do you have recommendations for that kind of access?
Are we talking about like VPNs?
Remote access, right, to local files and applications?
If it's a choice, it depends on your budget, is a lot of it. Number one, I mean, there's OpenVPN, which is an absolutely free VPN that you can download, and almost all the commercial appliances are based on OpenVPN. So it's nice, it's easy to use, but you do need to have some network knowledge to use it.
We've used that here.
Right? Yeah, we've used a version of it here. Also, Windows has the exact same thing. It has a VPN built into it as well that you can configure. How to Geek is a good place to go look up how to do that, or a quick Google search will show you how to do it. But you can do it, but it also requires what's called public access to the internet, which means that you have an IP it means you have an address that is actually addressable to the entire internet versus just inside your network. Another good option is look on your router. There's a good chance that your router has a VPN built on it. Linksys loves to do this. Most brands, I think even Yeah, Netgear also.
Netgear does. I know. I've got that on my Orbi at home. Yep.
Yeah, and they work as long as you keep your hardware up to date. Make sure you're running those firmware updates. It's a great way to have a VPN. And then finally, there's things like TeamViewer, which you install on a remote computer, and then you can access it remotely. They're not my favorite way to get into a network, just because you're dependent on the security of a third party at that point. And, you know, we've had a lot of breaches with third parties.
And another one we've talked about.
So strong passwords are important there. TeamViewer is good if you don't have a static IP address to
a public IP address to work with. Yeah.
Right.
As I mentioned, we've used a software product too from Untangle.
Yep. That's a hardware product too.
Yeah, hardware or software. You can get either one.
Right.
It works well.
It's free. And you can put it, actually, if you're a home user, I think Jared, who's our general network administrator, he actually uses one at home for his kids. He can keep an eye on what they're browsing. It's a really, it really does have a nice interface. You can block sites with it, which a lot of routers don't do. A lot do now, but a lot don't. You can do category blocking.
That's with Untangle you're talking about,
that's
right?
That's Untangle. Its interface is... it's semi-friendly, I guess. I'd recommend it for intermediate user level,
right?
Not 101.
There's things like OpenDNS as well that do something similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dan, you get the final question because you hold the purse strings. What kind of budget should a congregation or a church or a school be thinking about when it comes to network security? That's kind of a broad question, but any kind of guidelines that you would suggest there?
Well, obviously it needs to be a priority. So every congregation, every school should give it certainly some serious thought. I think it depends partly on the size of the organization. If you're a large school, large congregation, you're probably going to be investing a little more money and should be investing a little bit more money than a school that maybe has just one or two teachers, a single pastor, maybe a secretary. You're not going to need quite as much coverage there. So it's a really hard question to just put a dollar figure to, but it certainly is a priority that should be in the budget.
Very good. Well, we appreciate the time that you've spent with us, guys, and we certainly appreciate your service to the Synod and keeping our data safe. We sleep better at night knowing that Dan and Rob are on the job at our Synod offices. So thanks for that and all that you do.
Well, thanks for having us on.
All right.
All right, Sally. Nice of them to join us. We've had, I think, both of them on. I don't know if it was together or separately, but it's been quite a while ago, and we try not to burden the easy targets here in the Synod office to come on our show. We try and go outside our four walls here, but it's good to get that expertise and the knowledge that they've and they spend a lot of time thinking about security these days. So it's nice to get their perspective.
Yeah, the question I didn't get to ask was what kind of things are on the reports they monitor? Because I bet just the little old CMM gets peppered quite a bit with.
You would really be amazed at how many penetration attacks we see every day, and the amount of malware that tries to get into our systems that they block at the door. So it's not insignificant at all.
Right.
All right. Good conversation. Thanks again to Dan and Rob for spending some time with us.
Yeah, I'll head over to How To Geek. That sounds like my kind of site. So,
howtogeek.com. Yep, that's a great site. All right. So let's move on to our news in tech segment. And the big news over the past week was the fact that there is a new iPhone. Well, it's the symbol X, but they pronounce it iPhone 10. And it has some kind of revolutionary, they'd call it maybe magical, new features built into iPhone 10. First of all, it's an edge-to-edge screen. It's actually a different kind of panel that they put in this, similar to what now Samsung uses, a little bit more vibrant. The blacks are a little blacker, a little more vivid. It's a 5.8 inch. There's only one size of this, of iPhone X. They call it Super Retina, 5.8 inch Super Retina screen. Fills the hand and dazzles the eyes is how they describe it on their website. It is actually a very beautiful looking phone. They have something called a true depth camera, which enables face ID. So no more home buttons. So you don't need your fingerprint. You just need your face. And so there's a camera at the top of the screen that you look at, and if it recognizes you, and apparently fairly secure, as secure, they claim even better than fingerprints. It is, of course, waterproof. And what am I missing? I had a couple notes here that I wanted to make sure I shared with the class. Edge to edge. The glass front is also now on the back. So for many years now, I think since iPhone 6, 6 and 7, so 3 or 4 years now, was all aluminum or metal. Now the glass is on the back as well as the front, which does enable some wireless charging capabilities, which is kind of nice. I've had phones that do wireless charging in the past, and that's actually very convenient to be able to do that. So apparently this is selling well. It's hard to get a hold of. Not everybody can just go out to the store and grab one. Comes with a pretty good price tag as well. So they've upped the ante on these new features, and I think the base unit is $999 at this point. You can spread that out over, you know, whatever period your carrier might provide and get that to, you know, $30-something a month or whatever. But you know, it's a pretty piece of hardware, but you're going to pay a pretty price as well. So I think that was all the rage, and by all accounts the reviews have been very, very positive so far. So
I'm surprised your list of things to talk about didn't include Animojis, Martin. I heard that's the big seller on the $1,000 iPhone.
Yes, Animojis take advantage of this Face ID, you know, all the sensors that are in there, and allow you to basically talk and have a character mimic or imitate your facial gestures, your mouth moving, and it's actually quite amazing. I don't know if you've seen any of the YouTube videos where they're doing Animoji karaoke. It's actually kind of a thing, an internet meme, but this will be, you know, kind of like when stickers came out on the iPhone. They'll probably be real popular for a few weeks, but that's what I suspect will happen here. But it's actually pretty cool that they can do this kind of technology. So.
Fun stuff. Is one showing up in the Spriggs household for Christmas or something?
Oh, probably.
Probably. You'll have to give us the firsthand experience once you have one.
One thing is this little notch here. I don't know what they call it, maybe they do call it the notch. It will require app developers to kind of design around that. So it would be something that the Wells mobile app probably doesn't account for very well yet at this point. So a rewrite is in the works. So
always something new, right?
Always something new. Wow. All right. Talking about news, there's news in Wells as well, Sally.
There is very exciting news. We've hinted at this a little bit on the Wells Tech podcast, but wanted to share with our listeners official announcement about Wells EdTech Lead Summit 2019. Education, technology, and leadership are coming together June 25th through 27th at Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin Dells. So we got a good year and a half to wait for it, but it's going to be worth the wait because we're going to plan quite a bang-up conference there. I'm very excited to be joining together with the education office, Lutheran Schools office, and also bringing in a leadership component to our conference. And so win-win-win for those that are able to attend. We have a website up at wellsedtechlead.com, and you can head over there and sign up for our email list, and we will keep you informed as the conference plans begin to develop. Be sure to mark it on your calendar. Again, the dates are June 25th through 27th, 2019, and we're going to Wisconsin Dells. What's more fun than that? So we want to see you there.
Good. I'm looking forward to that as well, because it will have been some time between the last WellsTech conference we had, which was 2015 to 2019, so a four-year gap there. Mm-hmm. So storing up all that technology stuff, which probably would be an entirely different conversation. 4 years of technology has passed, so cool new stuff available.
Definitely. All right, and we also wanted to make mention that Campus Ministry has a brand new system for gathering information from students that are in college. And so if you want to head over to wells.net/campus-ministry, you're going to find a link there to have college students sign up. They can actually receive a subscription to Meditations and or Forward in Christ magazine just by registering on the site, and it will connect them with the local congregation or campus ministry organization that serves their college where they're in school. So wells.net/campus-ministry is the key to getting to our information system for college students.
Very nice. It's great to keep that data up to date so that we're not losing our college students. We know that they are under attack, you know, on our college campuses, many of our college campuses. So please remember them, not only in your prayers, but encourage them to take advantage of signing up and getting them connected with a campus ministry.
Definitely.
Let's move on to our picks of the week.
And my pick of the week is a little bit forward thinking. I suspect that some of our listeners are preparing for the busy Advent, Christmas, Epiphany season that lies ahead just around the corner. And I thought it would be good timing to remind folks about our WellsTech Photo Challenge Library, which is housed out on the Flickr website. And we have some pretty amazing Christmas and Advent photos that you can take advantage of for whatever your needs are in communication. And I'll have a little tie-in with my ministry resource, where imagery is very, very popular, especially when you're communicating via social media. So some of these images might help you in that effort as well. And just did a little further looking and found images on the Pexel site for Christmas. Just a wide variety there, a lot of snow, a lot of Christmas decorations and things like that. Some pretty nice images that you could add words, text over, or whatever your interest is.
P-E-X-E-L, right?
Pexel. Yeah, exactly. And they actually have a video site at videos.pexels.com, and there's some Christmas videos out there as well, a lot of Christmas tree lights, bouquet effect, flashing lights, things like that. But maybe these will be helpful to you, like I said, as you plan your Christmas communication, to be able to have these photo galleries at your disposal to help with those communication efforts.
Very nice. Thank you, Sally, for sharing that. I am going to share a tool that it's something in the back of my mind. I didn't do a search for it on our WellsTech site. Something tells me that I've shared this before, but it is a tool called Draft, and they build themselves as kind of an easy version control and collaboration for writers. And basically, it's a two-part scenario where you've got a kind of a cloud app where you can basically do your writing. You can do your drafts and collaborations and whatever. But there's also a little extension, Chrome extension, that enables you to use it in some different scenarios that you may want a little bit bigger writing surface to work on. I'm really excited about this, and I've used it off and on over the years, but they just kind of keep making it better and better. So the way it works is it's a text writer or an editor where you can use HTML or something called Markdown. And we've talked about Markdown in the past. Those of you that know how to use Markdown would feel right at home on Trello, because it uses Markdown to kind of add highlighting to text and bullets and links and those kinds of things. But the way it works is it basically takes over your browser screen. So it's all browser based, and you write, kind of on a gray screen. There's no frills here. It's just text writing. So it's kind of a distraction free experience. They've got great instructions. But what you can do with it then is export it. You can sync it to Google Docs or Evernote or some of those other cloud services and keep it in sync. And then also collaborate with it or collaborate with other people in it. It's got all kinds of different editing features, drafting features, collaboration features, footnotes, et cetera, et cetera. And it just is kind of a quick and easy place to either jot stuff down, to-dos, or short snippets, or even longer form writing where you can save different versions, but then also kind of just have it right there in your browser. So you don't need a separate application. For instance, you don't need to load up Word or to go into Google Drive. It's just always there in your browser. You just need to go to the website. As I mentioned, the other kind of cool thing, if I just maybe go into my, this is always dangerous, but I'll go into my Gmail account and start a new message here. Let's see if I can make this full screen. What you can do is, if you're in Gmail and you're composing a message or even replying to a message, you can use a little extension within Chrome. It just it's a little pencil icon. So you hit the little pencil icon, and it says create a new document or use a previous document. I'm just going to create a new one. And then it immediately pulls into it what you had in your little text box. So if you want to write kind of a longer email, nicely formatted, but you don't want to kind of be cramped in that little three-line space that sometimes the online form might provide, you can come in here and do your typing and your formatting, and actually even save it out so that you've got it saved externally, and maybe you want to reuse it. And then when you go to save it, it gives you the option to paste it back in to, let's say, Gmail, which is really cool. So I'm just going to paste it back in, and it comes right back in. So you have all kinds of options to use kind of a full-fledged editor and all the features that it provides. One nice thing about it is it's totally free. I think there is a premium version, but I think for most of what I do, this has been perfectly fine. Just nice to know that it's here, and if you just need to jot down a quick note, this is a great place to do it. So this is called Draft. It's at draftin.com. So take a look at that if you need kind of a good text editor. It's also maybe something that would be a viable option for the classroom, so that you've got students that maybe you don't want to go through, and they kind of do a compare and contrast on the site and some of their instructions about some of the advantages of this over using Google Docs, where versioning is much better on this, where you can actually save entire drafts on Google Docs. You kind of have some problems with overwriting, and it's very difficult to see what's happened to a document over time. With drafts, you have that kind of built in, and that solution makes a lot of sense. So this might be a solution for collaborative writing within the classroom. So that is my pick of the week, Draft at draftin.com.
Good stuff, Martin. I guess Trello fans, like you mentioned, would be very inclined to make use of this, because I do find myself, after working in Trello a lot, doing some of that markup language in places where it's not appropriate, where it doesn't do me any good to put brackets around things I want to be links or whatever.
Once you catch on to the language, it's actually kind of a cool thing where, a double asterisk gives you bold, and then a dash gives you a bulleted list, and lots of different real quick things where you're not having to click around, and it does nice formatting for you. And more applications are accepting that too. So,
good stuff.
All right, Sally, let's move on to our ministry resource, or more accurately, your ministry resource.
Yep, and today I want to make some ripples. Ripple is a new mobile app that I came across recently, and its byline is a marketing team in your pocket. So I thought that was a great way to describe all the good things that Ripple can do for you. So totally mobile. It's going to need an iPhone or an Android device to make use of the product, but once you create an account with Ripple, you connect it to all your social media feeds. So for me, I connected it to our Twitter, our Facebook, and our Instagram accounts for Wells Tech. And then it actually helps you, it prompts you each day with ideas to do post on Ripple. So I have some examples in the blog post that I put out there on Wells Tech of different ones that I posted. Write a strong password policy, your gospel outreach discoveries, or feature Friday, or whatever. Some of them can be static images, others you can animate. So I have examples here of ones where it has like some overlay that comes in as an animation. And that's kind of eye-catching and popular in social media circles, to where it's not just a static image. My examples only have one or two images involved, however, but you can add up to 12 images, so it becomes more like a photo slideshow with the text overlay that is fly-in and things like that. And then the video that it creates, the animation that it creates, are posted for you to those different sites. There are two levels of accounts with Ripple. You can have a free Ripple, or you can pay for their pro version, which is $10 a month, $9.99 a month. And the free does have very limited layouts and design components, although you can change colors, you can change fonts and things like that. So you can customize it to give yourself more variety, but you really are stuck with just maybe 6 or 8 different layouts that you can make use of with your pictures. So for instance, in this one it has kind of a black bar at the top and text, and this one has a bar down the left-hand side. They have another one that has a bar down the right-hand side, or the overlay that comes on top of a picture with a color to it and words that show up. Those are just examples of different free options, but when you pay for the pro, you get over 200 of those different layouts to make use of. And then they also give you different fonts and imagery that you can use as well. So there's lots of advantages to that pro account. One thing that I think would be really worth the money is scheduling. We've talked before, Martin, about tools like Hootsuite that allow you to schedule your post. And with Ripple Pro, you can schedule with them as well. And when I talked about it giving you those suggestions, I actually have it up on my phone here. You can see the suggestions along the top of the screen if you're watching the video. It does that for several days in advance. So you can program out these Ripple posts for a week or more in advance with different suggestions and layouts that they provide for you. So there was a really neat blog post on their site, and I linked to that in my post as well, just showing how a small business owner, it was actually a tire store, how they use it. And it seems like you've got a whole marketing team behind you, and you're just one person on your phone making use of this easy app. And after you've posted, it gives you all kinds of analytics that go along with it. So throughout the length of time that people are viewing and clicking on your resources that you've put out there, it's counting them up across Instagram, across Twitter, across Facebook. There are other social media channels you can add it to as well. So it's kind of an all-in-one tool. It helps you create it. It gives you ideas for creating and layouts and text and things to use. And then it gives you analytics around what you've posted. So you can kind of set goals and see if you hit them for the week and things like that. So the name of the app is Ripple. The spelling is Internet Special. It's R-I-P-L. And you can learn more on the blog post out on the Wells Tech site.
So it's learning and it's also teaching. So it's figuring out, you know, how effective a particular template was or message was or time of day or location. And then it's coming back to you and trying to teach you to get better and maybe make some improvements. So have you noticed, you probably haven't been using it long enough, but have you noticed increased engagement where you've used these?
Well, I would say yes. I don't know if you can see this, the graph on the screen, but the very first week I used it, I posted two or three that week. And the other weeks I've only posted one. And the first week I got 41 engagements. So different people liked or commented on or whatever across the different social media.
And that was higher than average.
12 to 20 engagements as I've posted these. And so one of my goals with Wells Tech social media is to post something every day, and I'm just not there yet. There's just not enough time in the day for me to do that. But I think with this type of tool, I could begin to approach that and perhaps get more engagement on the different content.
Because you could schedule it, right? That's probably helpful too, right?
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Interesting. Good stuff. And free. There's a free version, but if you want to kind of take it to the next level and think it's doing it for you, then it's probably well worth the, you know, the $10 a month that they charge. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Well, enough about us, Sally. Let's talk about what other people are talking about in our community feedback section.
And this week we heard from Pastor Peter Hagen. He serves in Fairmont, Minnesota, at Shepherd of the Lakes Lutheran Church.
We've heard Peter before. First time contributor, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Nice. And we actually heard from him through the Wells Intersections group on Facebook, which Pastor Jim Aderman started after that 2015 Wells Tech conference.
Right.
And just a way to share more ideas and things about using technology in ministry. And Pastor Hagen posted recently and shared a link to an article from the newspaper there in Fairmont, Minnesota, the title of which is Church Looks to Implement Online Plans. And it kind of does a quick overview of a podcast he's doing daily. It's called Green Pastures with Jesus. So he's putting out a regular podcast and making plans to do online streaming of their services. And interestingly, he talks a lot about the value of streaming services, but he also talks a lot about the value of face-to-face worship as well, and how Christians want to gather around the means of grace and have face-to-face worship as well. So I think there's a place for each, and his explanation is just excellent in this article. And what's really fun is that he gave a little bit of an explanation on Facebook as well, kind of a behind the scenes. He says, local and small town newspapers are still desperate for happy content. Suggest a special interest story about churches and technology and see what happens. Our local paper, circulation of 6,000 homes, printed a front page article with a full color photo. I contacted them about a story idea. The reporter interviewed me and basically printed a cleaned up 1,000 word quotation from me. So a great way to get the word out is to take advantage and make contact with your local media and share stories. I know several years ago we did something similar in Sleepy Eye when we were doing streaming, and our missionaries down in Mexico were watching our streaming service. We actually got a picture of them gathered around the computer monitor joining us in worship from Mexico, and that was a big article in the local newspaper. And so great idea, Pastor, to take advantage of that. Thanks for sharing. We'll include a link to the Shepherd of the Lakes podcast, Green Pastures, which is available on iTunes as well as Stitcher and probably other podcast locations as well. So nice to add that to our collection of podcasts and to get this encouragement about using the local media to share the good news.
Very nice. I think that took care of both of those items there, didn't it?
It was the whole shebang. That was our community feedback for this.
If you want to contribute to the show, it's very easy to do. Just go to wellstech.wells.net. That's our show notes page. And beyond just the wealth of information that's there, all 523 episodes can be found there. Also can be found there different ways to connect with us. We have our social networks across the top. You have a little blue bar on the right that says send us a voicemail. You can open up any of the episodes, and there's a comment, a way to comment on them. We will receive that message as well. And you can send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, if that is your communication vehicle of choice. Sally, do we have a video this week?
And yes, this week we have returned to our friends at Your Time of Grace. It's a video effort that's part of Time of Grace Ministries, and they have over 13,000 subscribers on their YouTube channel now. Very encouraging to see that. It looks like their daily videos are viewed 3,000 or more times on average. So very exciting steps for that ministry to be sharing the good news. They're currently doing a series called Joy in Difficult Situations, and the video that we'll feature today is called Joy in Humility. Just a little flavor of the type of message that subscribers are able to get there. They're usually about 3 minutes each, and just a real positive way to start your day or to include in your day. Maybe a great thing to share with younger generation who might enjoy YouTube videos a good bit to consider subscribing to the Your Time of Grace channel. So check it out.
Very nice. Well, that is a jam-packed show we just put together here for episode, whatever one we're on, 523. We're going to do 524 next week, and we're going to have another couple of helpful interviews from Jim Rachi and Ken Jones from Martin Luther College. So we'll go to the other side of the river out in Minnesota there in New Ulm and talk to Jim and Ken about fishing. Not the fishing you'd think, but the fishing that security experts care about. And that's, if you don't know what that is, you have 1 week to bone up a little bit. That's P-H-I-S-H-I-N. G. So that's coming up next week. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Really happy you do that. And bring your friends next week. We would love to make the Wells Tech family just a little bit bigger each and every week. Thanks, and have a great week. Bye-bye.